This is something you have to do for yourselves. The conference is Angelique's idea, and it's a good one. I'm not going to influence any of the participants in any way. They either come of their own volition or the conference fails. It wasn't failing, Tavalera saw. Yes, there were arguments and even tantrums from time to time. But slowly the conference came together. Some came willingly, eagerly. Some were reluctant. But all the world's leaders were going to meet in one grand conference to discuss their differences and try to find ways to resolve them peacefully. Tavalera thought of something an old British leader named Churchill had once said when a rival complained that international meetings were nothing but meaningless talk, jawboning. Churchill replied, "Jaw, jaw, is better than war, war." Despite his angry resentment, Tavalera grinned to himself over that one. Reading about history can give you a deeper perspective on today, he told himself. Sometimes it's even fun, almost. The scientists were almost as testy and touchy as the politicians, Tavalera learned. Almost. As he watched Dr. Feingold at work, Tavalera learned that the world's leading scientists had stopped doing any meaningful research years earlier, of course. In their own way, they had become politicians, directing the work of younger men and women. It must be like trying to herd cats, Tavalera thought, or nailing pudding to a wall. Scientists didn't take to organization very well. They were individualists, most of them, and so eager to get on with their own particular research programs that they resisted any efforts to shape or control their work. Yet they needed funding for that work, and that's where the older scientists helped them most. Their leaders served as the interface between the active researchers and the government and religious leaders who controlled the purse strings. Interface hell, Tavalera thought. As he looked deeper into the way scientific research was funded, he realized that the older dudes acted as a buffer between the eager young researchers and the doubting, often fearful politicians and churchmen. It's a wonder any research gets done, Tavalera said to himself, as he realized all the barriers that any new idea had to hurdle. The trickiest part of setting up the conference, though, arose from the fact that there was a secret agenda that only a few of the most powerful governments would be party to. While the Grand Assembly of all nations would meet in the full glare of global publicity, the nuclear powers would send representatives to the secret meeting to discuss their hidden agenda. It was in Archbishop Overmyer's office that Tavalera began to realize that this secret agenda was the real reason for the public conference. Angelique usually met with the Archbishop alone, one-on-one. Tavalera believed she didn't think too highly of Overmyer. She always seemed unsatisfied, disappointed after a session with the Archbishop. Now he sat beside her in front of Overmyer's desk. The smart screens covering the office's walls showed lists of conference participants, logistical details, food requirements for the dozens of different cultures that would attend the meeting. Overmyer never fully accepted his presence, Tavalera recognized. The Archbishop always looked uncomfortable around him, suspicious, even though he only came to the man's office with Sister Angelique at her insistence. Sitting behind his broad desk, perspiring noticeably despite the office's frigid air conditioning, Archbishop Overmyer glanced unhappily at Tavalera, then turned his pumpkin-plump face to Angelique.
"The subject we're to discuss today is extremely sensitive," he said.
Angelique replied, "Yes, Your Eminence." Eyeing Tavalera again, the Archbishop said,
"My security people tell me we shouldn't allow unnecessary people to take part in these discussions."
With a slight smile, Angelique said softly,
"Raoul has become an indispensable assistant to me, Your Eminence. He's done as much to set up the arrangements for this conference as I have, almost."
The Archbishop said,
"Mr. Tavalera, you're not a member of our church, are you?"
It was not a question. Tavalera said,
"No, sir, I'm not." "Do you consider yourself to be a Christian?"
"I think so."
"You think so?"
The Archbishop's voice rose. Feeling that he'd rather get up and walk out on this pompous gas bag, Tavalera forced his voice to remain calm, even as he replied, "I try to live up to the ideals that Christ taught. He didn't think you needed anything more than an honest heart to live a good life." The Archbishop glared at him while Tavallera wondered if he'd thought of that answer on his own, or if Stoner had implanted it in his mind. "Get out of my head," he fumed silently. No response. Angelique stood up.
"Your Eminence, Mr. Tavallera is our link with Stoner. And Stoner is the real reason why we're arranging this conference, isn't he?"
Something flickered in the Archbishop's eyes, Tavallera thought. Some unspoken thought passed between him and Angelique. Tavallera looked from her face to the Archbishop's and back again.
"Very well," said Overmeyer, almost sullenly. He pointed a pudgy forefinger at Tavallera. "But you must remember, young man, that what we discuss in this office is extremely sensitive and must not be repeated outside these walls. Not even to Stoner, do you understand?"
It was all Tavallera could do to refrain from laughing in the Archbishop's face. While he nodded, straight-faced, he was thinking, "Stoner knows everything I know. He's inside my head whether I like it or not, and this overstuffed jerkball still hasn't tumbled to that fact." But Sister Angelique knew, Tavallera saw. He could tell from the stiff expression on her face that she had pretty much the same opinion of the Archbishop that he did.
Joe.
In the safety of their starship, Joe confronted her two children.
"You both took unnecessary risks."
"Oh, Mother," said Kathy.
"I was perfectly safe every step of the way."
"Were you?"
To human eyes, it would have seemed that the three of them were in a sterile, austere waiting room of some kind. Its soft gray walls were bare and windowless. Glareless lighting suffused from the smooth, featureless ceiling. Joe sat on a tall, cushioned stool with a low, curving back. She was wearing sand-colored, hip-hugging slacks, with a loose blouse of pale lemon hanging over them. Her daughter, sitting on a similar stool facing her, was dressed as she had been in Cairo, in a short dark skirt and sleeveless white starched shirt. Crossing her legs, Kathy answered,
"With you hovering over me every instant, I was never in any danger at all."
Rick, standing between the two women, grinned at his sister. "You almost sound disappointed."
"Typical male attitude," Kathy sniffed. "I was worried about you both," Joe said.
"I was okay, Mom," said Rick. "No problems."
Joe knew they were right, and she was being overly protective. Still.
"Well, what did you learn that you didn't know before you went down there?"
Kathy leaned forward slightly, her expression suddenly intent.
"It's just like Dad said. Population growth is the root of their problems."
Joe nodded.
"We know that." "It's different when you see it face to face," Kathy went on. "When you see teenagers with a baby on their hip and another in the belly, educated women who see nothing wrong with having 6 or 7 babies."
Rick shook his head. "They'll overpopulate themselves into extinction."
"Unless we do something to stop them."
"Something?"
Joe asked.
"What can we do?"
"Cut down their birth rate," Kathy immediately replied.
"How?"
"By reducing their fertility rate. See to it that no woman on earth can have more than 2 children."
"You can't do that," Rick objected. "Dad's told us time and again that we can't force a solution on them."
"Dad's wrong," Kathy said firmly. "We've got to help them. Otherwise, they're heading straight toward a cliff. They can't solve their problems as long as they're overpopulating themselves."
"They'll learn to slow their population growth in time," Joe said.
"But they don't have time," Kathy insisted. "Dad's worried that they're heading toward a nuclear war. Even if they don't, the underlying problem will still be there. We've got to cut down their fertility rate. Fix it so no woman on earth can have more than 2 babies."
Joe rocked back on her seat.
That would mean a massive invasion of their natural rights.
"No, Mom,"
Kathy replied, an impish smile breaking across her face.
"Only a very teeny little invasion of their bodies."
Chapter 9. One of the most troublesome problems of arranging the conference was picking its site. The Asians balked at the idea of having it set anywhere in Europe. The Europeans refused to come to the United States. The Americans would not agree to a site in Africa. And so it went until Tavallera suggested picking an island in the Pacific Ocean, Tahiti. Once an idyllic Polynesian island, Tahiti had become a French colony in the 19th century, but finally won its